Thank you for our sponsors. Our learning should be an aliyah from the neshama of Esther Tehila, Bas Gavriel Pinchas. Okay, here we go. Three ideas in 30 minutes. Pack Parsha, Parshas Yisro. We start off with a very beautiful idea, which I think is holds a lot of truth in it, as do all of our ideas, but this one particularly resonated with me. And it comes from the Sefer Nachal Eitan. And it's in his commentary on Shavuos. He comments on the Pasuk in our Parsha, this coming week's Parsha, Ve'ata, Im Shamoa Tishmu Bekoli. Hashem says, and now, if you listen to my voice. Now, before this, he quoted the Medrash, that Ein Ve'ata Ela Tshuva, that the Medrash already writes that the language of Ata, with an ayin, is the language of tshuva. We've spoken about in the past that why is that the case? Because when it comes to doing tshuva, what do you have to do? You can't delay. You can't procrastinate. Ata with an ayin is a language of tshuva because the only way to change is by doing it now, by not procrastinating, by not pushing off, but you got to do it right now. Now he says the following. If you look in Rashi over there on the Pasuk, Rashi says something very interesting. Rashi comments on the word ve'ata, and he writes, Imata tegablu aleichem, if you accept upon yourself the Torah now, ye'erav lachem mikan ve'elech, then it will get sweeter as it goes along. Why? Shekol haschalos kashos. Because all beginnings are difficult. All beginnings are challenging. Now, I've read that Rashi many times, and it seemed to me pretty simple. What he's saying is, if you do it now, so what I thought he was saying is the more you do it, the easier it gets, because kol haschalos kashos. When you start doing something, that's when it's difficult, but the more you do something, the less difficult it becomes. But he asked the question. He says, I understand. Lama chazer lahaskir inyan kushi haschala, achar shekvar hivtiach ala revo shetavo lasof. In other words, you could have cut off Rashi at before the last three words. Rashi could have simply said, imata tekablu aleichem, if you accept it now, yerav lachen mikan leilech, so it'll get easier. I don't need the words shekol haschalos kashos. In other words, without that, I could have understood it. If I tell you, let's say you're practicing your free throws, you're practicing shooting a basketball. So I say, okay, if you start at a young age, eventually you're going to get really good at it. That's a pretty understandable statement. I don't have to say, because all beginnings are challenging. You would infer that. You would know that on your own. Let's say I'm teaching my children driving right now, which in and of itself is a scary prospect for a variety of reasons. Most notably because I'm scared to see what my insurance is going to look like when both of them come on my insurance. But anyways, progressive. My son just wants the one with the, what's it, an iguana? What's that? Geico. Yeah, he just likes the commercials. The commercials work. Okay, so if I would say, you know, if you start driving now, so eventually you're going to become a better driver. Again, that's an understandable statement. Why do I have to say shekol haschalos kashos? Because you should know it's hard to do it at the beginning. That was his question. And his answer is so beautiful. He says, v'remez bezeh. He says, what Rashi is really teaching us. Ki af b'yos ish Yisrael zoche umasig lahargish ha'arevos be'avodas Hashem Yisbarach. Even if a person gets to the point where something becomes sweeter for him, something becomes easier for him, ein dai lo bazeh. You shouldn't be satisfied with that. Ela nitzrach sheyeh mevakesh umefashvesh achar haschalos kashos acheros. Listen to how he rereads Rashi. It's so magnificent. He says, after something's already been easy for you, and after you've already gotten good at something, you know what you have to do? You don't sit on your laurels. You don't say, okay, I've arrived. But rather, you know what you look for? You look for haschalos kashos acheros. You look for new beginnings, new challenges, new ways to test yourselves, new ways to grow. And therefore, he says, now you have to reread Rashi. Rashi says, imata tekablu aleichem, if you start it now, yerav lachem mikam ve'elech, so it's going to get easier. But, shekol haschalos kashos. But what do you have to do? You have to look now for haschalos kashos acheros. You have to look for new challenges. And therefore he says, that's what the pasuk means, b'chol yom yu beinecha kechadashim, that Torah has to be new in your eyes every single day. He says, ki ein dai le'ish Yisrael be'elu advarim shayu sheinim lo. It's not good enough to just be satisfied with what you're used to and what you're already good at. Rather, what do you have to do? Eli yemachnis atzmo tamid be'avodas Hashem Yisparach b'inyanim chadashim. You always have to try new things. And you always have to challenge yourself in new ways, And you always have to be looking for new areas in growth. Shatzarich liyiga atzmo behem. Because you always have to be striving. You always be having to be looking to grow. Ubezeyem mosef aholech lidabes bechinas hakedusha olam. And that's how we're going to bring more kedusha into the world. So says the Nachal Eitan, you might think that a Jew can get to the point in his life, whether it's in his avodas Hashem or in any other area of life, where you say, you know what? I've arrived. I've done it. I've put in my time. And therefore, now I've accomplished. Now I've arrived. Rather, he says, the last words of Kalas Chalas Kashos really should be translated as that we have to look for Haschalos Kashos Acheros. We have to look for new ways to challenge ourselves. We can never be satisfied. We always have to be looking for new areas of growth. And therefore, the key line there is the underline, the third underline. Elenitzrach loshia mevakesh umefashvesh. A person always has to be looking for haschalos kashos acheros. New ways to challenge themselves and new ways to grow. The most successful people I know live their lives with this mentality. A person who is always looking to grow. A person who is always looking to challenge themselves. And the beautiful thing about this is it is irrespective of age. It is irrespective of status in life. It is irrespective of your job. A person who goes through life with that mindset of a growth mindset, a mindset of I'm always going to challenge myself, and once I've accomplished one thing, and one thing's become easier for me, now it's time for me to challenge myself in a new area. And once I've mastered that, then I'm going to continue to challenge myself in another area, because I'm always looking for haschalos kashos acheros. I'm always looking for new areas to challenge myself. And that's why he explains Rashi. Rashi said, Imata tegablu aleichem, if you accept it upon yourself, yerav lachem mikan ve'ilech, then it's going to become easier for you. But that's not the end of Rashi. The end of Rashi is not, and now it's going to become easier for you. Because that's not our goal in life. That's not our objective. But rather, Rashi adds on three words, shekol haschalos kashos, which he translates to mean, because we always look for new beginnings. We always look for new ways to challenge ourselves. We always look for new opportunities to grow. We always look for new ways to improve ourselves. And that's how he says, v'zeh mosi v'holich. That's how we're going to continue to increase new areas of kedusha into this world when we walk through life, not with a fixed mindset, not with saying that I've arrived, but rather continuously challenging ourselves. And I think this applies in any area of life. It applies in Judaism. It applies in learning. It applies in davening. Any area of Judaism, I think part of what we try to instill in people here in the shul, and I think it's really one of the calling cards of our shul, is that our members always have a growth mindset. And Rabbi Goldberg's always pushing that, is that if you've accomplished, we're always looking to accomplish more. And he lives it. He breathes it. Every year he comes with new initiatives and new learning programs and new ways of challenging himself and therefore challenging ourselves. To me, that's a characteristic that you can't teach. It's a characteristic that you have to live by example. But when you have a community that lives by that, that's a beautiful thing. That, to me, is one of the most important values to instill in children and for us to model ourselves, always looking for new challenges, always looking for new opportunities. I was speaking to, there was a yeshiva, representatives from a yeshiva visiting the other day, and I'm not going to give the details, I don't want to embarrass the person, but there was a representative from yeshiva, and they were asking me about someone in the community. So the person's a very accomplished physician, and he's accomplished a lot, and he recently taught himself a new skill, a new trade in Judaism. And they were asking me about him, so I was telling him about this new trade. They said, how does he find the time for this? Hey, you know, he's a physician, he's learning, and he's giving shirim, and now he learns this also. I said, because a person who always goes through life with that growth mindset, a person who's always looking to challenge themselves, a person who's always looking for new opportunities to use their creativity and their energies and the gifts that Hashem gave them, that's someone who looks at kol haschalos kashos not as a threat, but as an opportunity, because, as he says, she mevakesh, we should always be looking. Achar haschalos kashos acheros. We should always be looking for new opportunities to challenge ourselves. That is idea number one. Okay, idea number two comes from the Tiferes Shlomo, or Shlomo of Adamsk. Says a very beautiful idea, again, something I never noticed. So if you look in the beginning of the Parsha, and I never noticed before, Yisro comes, and you have that famous pasuk, right? Vayishma Yisro, and Rashi says, Mashmua Sheb, what did he hear that he came? And Yisro comes, and then there's like a little bit of almost like a parenthesis, and there's a conversation between Moshe and Yisro, and then about like seven or eight psukim later, it comes back to Moshe telling Yisro, and then all of a sudden Yisro comes, Vayomer Yisro, Baruch Hashem, Hashir Yitzil Aschem, Yad Mitzrayim, Yad Paro, Hashir Yitzil Asam Mitachas, Yad Mitzrayim. So Yisro heard about it in Pasuk 1, but it takes about 7-8 Pesukim later for Yisro to come back and to sing praise of Hashem. Baruch Hashem, right? Thank God. Ashir Yitzilas Chamiya Mitzrayim Miya Paro. Thank God. I heard all about this. Sounds like a really traumatic experience. It's amazing that Hashem saved you. Ask the Tiferet Shlomo the following question. He says, I don't understand. Hine Yesh Lizbonin, where you have the underline on page number 2. Mahu Haravusa Shel Sheva Chazeh Shel Yisro Shenichta Betorah Mashalo Nichtav Kamo Mikol B'nei Yisrael. Right? What's the Chiddush here? That we're telling us that Yisro saying the praise of Hashem. Was he the only one, right? I mean, other people heard it. And also, what was the delay? Like, Vayishma Yisro was in Pasuk 1. All of a sudden now, we're in, I forget, it's like Pasuk 6, 7, 8. And now we get to the Yisro, Baruch Hashem Hashir Yitzil Aschem. So what exactly is the Torah adding here? We already know that Yisro was enthralled by what happened to the Jewish people. That's why Yisro came in the first place. So why does the Torah have to come along and say, oh, and Yisro said Baruch Hashem? Does the Torah record every time a Jew said Baruch Hashem? Does the Torah record every conversation? No, the Torah doesn't recall most of the conversations, yeah?
But Yisro was a Gentile priest.
Yisro was a Gentile priest. Good. But we already knew that he was enamored by what happened to the Jewish people. That was the first pasuk. And then it like breaks for 6-7 pasuk, and then it comes back to this. So he's asking, what really are we adding here? By telling us that Yisro says Baruch Hashem, like the phrase that he himself says. Therefore, says the Tiferet Shlomo, something very beautiful. He says that generally, what happens? Generally, when something happens in the world or in life, I view it through the prism of my own life. That's how we generally are. So something happens, and immediately, whether consciously or subconsciously, I process it through my own lens, through my own life experience, and how that is going to impact me. You oftentimes see this when things go on in Israel. People personalize the tragedy, or they personalize news stories. So generally, that's exactly what happens. Yisro does the exact opposite. The greatness of Yisro, oh, and by the way, that's what all the other nations of the world did. All the nations of the world, they heard what happened to the Jewish people, and what was their reaction? We read it last week in Az Yashir. We said it this morning, if you were paying attention, right? Right? So what do they say? So they were afraid. We talk about the fear and the trembling of the nations of the world. Why were they afraid? Because what did it mean? If Hashem could destroy the most powerful empire on the face of this earth, then what could he also do? He could destroy me, right? So if Israel can go after Iran, then little old country, whatever, you better be quaking in your boots, because if Israel could take down, you know, Hezbollah and Iran, okay, then they could come after you too. Now, why did everyone react that way? Because they personalized the story. They heard what Hashem did to the Mitzrim, and they said, oh, what about us? If Hashem can destroy the Mitzrim with such ease, then certainly he can come after us. And so they became afraid. Yisro does the opposite. Yisro is not worried about himself. He doesn't filter the news through the lens of his own life, but rather, who is he thinking about? He's thinking about us, the Jewish people. And in fact, what does he feel towards us, the Jewish people? He feels happiness. Says the Tiferet Shlomo that the Chiddush, the novelty of what Yisro said, is that he was able to manifest happiness for someone else who he wasn't related to. As Harry just said, it wasn't his people. He was somewhat of a foreigner. And yet, he was happy for someone else's success. And so he hears about the success of the Jewish people at the Yam Suf. Everyone else is afraid because all they're thinking about is themselves. Yisro comes along and he's not thinking about himself, but rather what's he thinking about? He's thinking about, wow, I'm so happy for the Jewish people. I'm so happy for someone else's success. Says the Tiferet Shlomo, that's the lesson over here. The lesson over here is to not just look at life through your own lens, but to be able to feel the happiness of another person. Let's read inside a little bit. He says in the second underline, V'ine kein hua ikar mash mispal adam al chavero, v'sas v'sameach b'yeshuaso. A person should always daven for his friend and be happy for his salvation. He should be happy for his successes. Go to the next underline. Avalderech ha-tzadikim va-yisharim. Hu lechalos ulitzapos al tovos chavero. Uli ischaiv atzmo avor chavero. A real tzaddik, says the Tiferet Shlomo, is someone who's defined as l'chalot u'letzafot, which means that I yearn, I look forward to tovas chaver. I look forward to the success of other people. Small people look at life through their own eyes, and therefore, they're almost either unbothered by or threatened by other people's successes. Big people are happy for other people's successes, and they celebrate those, and they encourage other people's successes. Think about some of the, I would venture to say, some of the bosses that you've had, or some of your mentors along the way. My guess is that the people who have elevated you throughout your life, the people who have inspired you throughout your life, are people who didn't get threatened by your success, but it's people who were happy and celebrated your success and encouraged more of that. And that's exactly what he's saying here. He says, "Zderech tzadikim," the way of a righteous person is l'chalot u'letzapot al tovas chavero, is that I'm happy for someone else's success. When you succeed, when you get a new job, I'm happy for you. And when you have a simcha in your family, I'm happy for you. And when you have success in life, I'm happy for you. And therefore, l'schayiv es asmo avor chavero. I live life not through the lens of how it impacts me, but I'm living my life in celebration of how it impacts you. He says that's what it means. V'inei zeu b'chinas ha'arvus shel b'nei Yisrael, shekol Yisrael arevim ze bazeh. So we generally interpret the words arevim ze bazeh to mean that we are, how would you translate arevim? Guarantors of one another. But what does the word arev also mean?
Sweet.
Sweet. In other words, the arvus, the connection we have, is that we're able to facilitate a sense of sweetness. That I'm happy when you're happy. That I'm joyous when you have successes. Arvus isn't just like, oh, we're all in this together, and that we have a shared fate, and when they come to kill us, they're going to come and kill all of us together. That's one level of arvus. That's one level of a relationship that we have to each other. But another level, says the Tiferet Shlomo, is that we have an arevus together. We have a sweetness together, which means I'm happy with your success. When you get a new job, I'm not threatened by that, but I'm happy for you. And if you start a new shiur, a new learning initiative, I'm happy for you. And if you have a success in life, I'm happy for you. And therefore, he says, at the next underline, he says, "Aval ikra tefila nishmas l'mala, yoser hu k'shmispal about chavero." And he says, it's a fact, we have many mamare chazal that says, that the most listened to form of tefila is not when you daven for yourself, but it's when you think about someone else and you daven for another person. And therefore, go to the next page, page number 3, where I have the underline. He says, now we understand what the novelty of what Yisro did. He says, "V'inei zeh hamida shenichta b'torah leva'er shevach shel Yisro." Now we understand the greatness of the praise of Yisro, that he says, "Baruch Hashem asher yitzil eschem b'yam Mitzrayim." Why was that so amazing? Ha'inyan she'ashevach hazeh, that this praise that Yisro said, "Mora al she'asas v'samach b'tovas b'nei Yisrael." He was happy about the success of the Jewish people. V'nasan shevach v'hodaya aleihem. And he was willing to celebrate that. Afal pi shehu lo haya mizrei Yisrael, as Harry pointed out. Even though he wasn't Jewish, and he wasn't part of our people. Hinehu someach b'tovasa. He was happy with their success. Hinei emes hu mida tova ba'adam sharoi lahalalo b'hatorah hakdosha. And that's what we're celebrating here. We're celebrating a person who was happy for someone else's success. And that's how the Tiferet Shlomo understands this Baruch Hashem. What's the chiddush of it? What's the novelty of it? Is that Yisro was happy for someone else's success. He was happy for the Jewish people's success, even though he wasn't part of it. And therefore, says the Tiferet Shlomo, it's a midah, tova ba'adam. That's an important characteristic that we have to develop within ourselves, is not to feel threatened by other people's successes, but specifically to celebrate them and to be able to be happy together with them. And he says that's the arvus. The arvus isn't just that we're interconnected. The arvus is that through our celebrating each other's successes, what are we able to do? We're able to create a sweetness amongst ourselves. I think it's a very beautiful idea. So idea number one that we saw was the idea from the Nachal Eitan, the idea of haschalos kashos acheros, always looking for new challenges, always looking for new opportunities for growth. The second idea comes from the Tiferet Shlomo, Rav Shlomo of Adamsk, who wonders about this pasuk of Vayomer Yisro Baruch Hashem. Why is the Torah telling us about that? Because it's teaching us an important midah. It's teaching us an important quality, which is that we should get to the point where we can be happy for other people. And that's the ultimate level of a midah, of a characteristic that a Jew should aspire for. Idea number three comes from one of my favorite Sfarim. I quote it almost every week. And that is the Menachem Sion, Rav Menachem and Sion Sachs. And he quotes here the following. So we know the Aseres HaDibros. And the first set of Dibros are the Ben Adam Lamakom. And the second set of Dibros are the Ben Adam Lechavero. And the last of those Aseres HaDibros is Lo Sachmo Beis Reecha. That you're not supposed to be jealous of your friend's house. Lo Sachmo Eishes Reecha. You shouldn't be jealous of your friend's wife. And nor should you be jealous of anything that he has. Okay, obviously this is an important quality that we shouldn't be jealous. As for Menachem ben Zion Sachs, out of all of the things to finish up, the Aseres HaDibros, why did the Torah specifically choose this one? Maybe don't kill, maybe don't kidnap. I mean, there's some real doozies in there of mitzvos. And yet, the culmination of the Aseres HaDibros, what does the Torah choose? Don't be jealous. Don't covet your friend's wife. Don't covet his home. Second of all, he says, why does it say it twice? If you notice, it says, Lo Sachmod Beis Reecha. You shouldn't be jealous of his house. And then it says, Lo Sachmod Eishes Reecha. It says the word Lo Sachmod how many times? Twice. What could the pasuk have said? It could have just said, Lo Sachmod Beis Reecha, Vi Eishes Reecha, Vi It doesn't need the words Lo Sachmod again. Therefore, comes along Rav Menachem ben Zion Sachs and says, why does it say it twice? Lahoros lanu ki kol mishbare ruach hatokvim es adam mikoram bechemda v'taiva. That every bad thing, basically, that happens to a person, every bad midah, every bad characteristic, is an outgrowth of desiring and jealousy. And therefore, he quotes the Medrash, that says, Lefichach, nichtamu aseres adibros be lo sachmod. Therefore, the aseres adibros ends with this prohibition of jealousy, lomar lecha, to teach you, shechomed over bekulam, that someone who's jealous can lead to really bad things. Now, he quotes the Sefer Achinuch, which gives a very dramatic example. He says, what's going to happen? Let's say I'm jealous of Jason's Angry's car. And because I'm jealous of Jason's Angry's car, I try to do a deal with his car, but Jason's not interested in selling me his, a Ferrari convertible. Is that even a thing? I don't know, right? So what am I going to do? So I might end up doing something. I might try to steal from Jason. What was that?
So I thought I kept it in the garage.
Right? So I might try stealing from Jason. It might lead to murder. Right? It could lead to all sorts of bad things. But we know in our life, you don't even need such a dramatic example. Think about how much jealousy and it's such a bad quality to have, where it's literally cancerous to a person's personality and the way they view their life, and it can poison everything about them. A person who walks through life jealous of other people and always looking at what other people have, they're never going to have happiness. That's why the Mishnah Pirkei Avos says that there are three things that are motzi en es ha'adam min ha'olam. There are three things that remove a person from the world, and one of them is taiva, right? So why is that? Because when I go through the world and all I think about is what you have, so it's motzi me from the world. In other words, like I literally can't live. I'm not living in my own world. I'm living in your world. It's a horrible place to be. Not that you guys live horrible worlds, but I'm supposed to live in my world. Right? So therefore, says the Piska Rabasi, that's why it finishes with this prohibition of Lo Sachmod as a reminder of the importance of not being jealous. But then he takes it a step further. And he says, if you look at Har Sinai, there's one idea that creeps up over and over and over again in the preparation of Har Sinai. And it's something that you wouldn't expect to find by Matan Torah. And that is the importance of boundaries. The importance of boundaries. V'igbalta es ha'am. One of the rules was you weren't allowed to go onto Har Sinai. Al tigashu el ha'isha. You weren't allowed to be with your spouse. The word gvul, in a various form, by the way, if you look, appears many, many times surrounding the story of Har Sinai. Why are boundaries so important? He says this is exactly the point. Horos hanodos lahagbil. Because what the Torah is trying to teach us is part of being a Jew is the ability to have self-restraint. Lahagdir, to create boundaries for yourself. Vilichbosh esataivos, and to control my desire. So I might want everything, but part of being a Jew is restricting that, is developing a muscle memory of self-restraint. And that's what Judaism is. Judaism, if you think about so many mitzvos, So many mitzvahs are to restrain us. So I go on vacation. It would be really, and my wife and I were talking, it would be really convenient if you could go on vacation and not have to pack food. Right? I mean, just think about how much of the time, energy, and resources before vacation go into making sure that you can eat. Imagine if you could just go on vacation without having to worry about food, because you could eat at any restaurant you want. It would totally change the dynamic. But we know the very first thing we do as a Jew when we plan a vacation is, what are we going to eat? Right? We have to hold ourselves back. In marital relations, why is there such an emphasis on that? Because that requires that sense of self-restraint. Part of Judaism, part of accepting the Torah, is accepting upon yourself the premise that I can control myself, that not everything is permissible to me. And just because there's something in the world doesn't mean I can have it, but I'm able to control myself. And therefore, he says, now you understand the pasuk in Aleinu, if you go to the underline in the next paragraph. He says, "B'tfilas Aleinu l'shabeach, sh'anu omrim b'siyuma kol tfila." What do we say the last thing we do before we go out to our day? So I'm going to leave the shul, and I'm going to go drive, and I'm going to see the cars in the parking lot, and I'm going to see the houses that I drive. I just got off, we have these soldiers here. We took them on a yacht in the intercoastal. The house, it's like not normal. I mean, the houses there are absurd, right? So you're going to see all this stuff, and you're going to go to work, and your boss might make a little more money than you or gotten a promotion, right? So how do you control that? How do you reconfigure your mindset to not live a life of jealousy? So he says, what do we see the last thing before Aleinu Shabeach? We say, Latakin Olam B'malchut Shakai. Why do we use the name of Hashem Shakai there? Says Rav Nachman Zion Sacks, Hashem Shakai, Shemuvanu Hu, where does it come from? Anihu Shamarti La'olami Dai. It's Hashem's way of saying, I created the world and I said, enough, enough. Moral tzimtzum histapkus visapkus. Tikuna olam yavo, that will fix the world when? Kasher anashim befrat ve'amushalos bechlal yomru dai. It's the ability for me to say, die. It's enough. I don't need it. I don't need every car. I don't need every house. I don't need every piece of food. That I'm able to have that self-control. V'lo yisavvu, v'lo yechdemu, yechmedu lama she'eno shalem. And that I'm not desirous and I'm not jealous of what other people have. And therefore, says Rav Nachman Zion Sacks, that's why the Torah ends with lo sachmod, with this prohibition of jealousy. Because the fundamental part of what we have to do as a Jew, inherent in every mitzvah that we have, is a commandment from Hashem to control ourselves. That I have to control what I eat, and I control what I do, intimacy, and I control what I do in my behaviors, I control the way I put on my shoes in the morning. Everything in my life is regulated. But by doing that, what I'm able to do is build up my muscle of self-control. And therefore, he says, that's why the Aseres Dibros ends with this prohibition of lo sachmod, because it's really at the essence of what all a life of Torah and mitzvot is about. I'm going to botch the story, but there's a great story. If anyone wants, I'll look it up. I just can't look it up right now. About two authors that were sitting together, very, very successful. It was Kurt Vonnegut, and I forgot who the other one was. And there's, you know, sitting around at a party, and everyone's super wealthy and super accomplished, and a guy pulls up and he's, you know, a gazillionaire. So he looks at Kurt Vonnegut and he says, you know, are you sad that this person makes more in a day that you made in your entire lifetime of selling books? And I think it's Kurt Vonnegut. He looks back at him and he says, yeah, but I have something that he doesn't have. And that is enough. Enough. I have enough. And I remember I heard that nugget and it made a profound impact on me, right? There, we can control everything, but we control whether we are satisfied with enough. Right, as Hashem says, Anihu she'amarti le'olami, die. It's that ability to be able to maintain that self-control, to not want everything. That's why gevul, boundaries, is so central to the story of Har Sinai. So we saw three ideas. We saw the beautiful idea of the Nachal Eitan, of challenging ourselves to always be looking for haschalos, kashos, acheros. That even when you've accomplished one thing, you're looking for the new thing. And when you fulfill that and you've conquered that, so then you look for something new. That's the viata, im shamo atishmu bekoli. That we're always you be'inecha kad chadashim. That we're always looking for something new. We're always looking for that new challenge. We're always looking for that new opportunity. Idea number two is the Tiferes Shlomo, Shlomo Verdamsk. That we have to celebrate each other's successes. That we shouldn't be jealous. We shouldn't feel threatened by other people's successes. We shouldn't be so selfish as to only interpret the world through what's best for me and within my interests. But sometimes it's just okay to be happy for another person. another person's success, another person's simcha, to train ourselves and remind ourselves to simply be happy for other people. And if we do that, that's what creates that arvus. Not just arvus that I'm a guarantor for you, but arvus in that I'm sweetened by your success, and therefore I'm sweetened by your happiness. And the last idea is from Rav Menachem ben Zion Sachs, the important reminder of creating boundaries. Of creating boundaries in our lives. Boundaries in what we seek. Boundaries in the ability to say to ourselves, I have enough. Boundaries in understanding how that is at the essence of every mitzvah. The ability to maintain that sense of self-control and restraint, which is in many ways unique to Judaism. And with that, I wish everyone a good Shabbos.